This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp. Life is hard sometimes, and there are many pathways in navigating the inevitable ups and downs of life. In riding these waves, I look to my yoga practice and also therapy. We all go through tough times like big life changes, periods of instability, conflict, or loss. BetterHelp connects you with a licensed therapist entirely online, which is very convenient, flexible, and suited to fit your schedule. Take the questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. And if it's not the right match for you, no worries. You can change your therapist for no additional charge. Sometimes getting started in therapy is the hardest part. To make it a little bit easier, go to the link provided in the show notes or go to visit betterhelp.com/yogaandpodcast today to get 10% off your first month. Popping out in the sun, we welcome everyone. Gave 101, the goal is having fun. I'm happy, like I told ya. I'm stretching now, doing yoga. Not stopping till it's over. Don't want the day to be done. I'm happy, like I told ya. I'm stretching now, doing yoga. Not stopping till it's over. Don't want the day to be done. Welcome, friends, to Yoga and Podcast. This show highlights the science and brings the magic of yoga and mind-body practices down to earth for the everyday person to help you live your best life. I'm your host, Ashley Weber, a yoga and Pilates teacher and forever student who is oh so curious about all things yoga and. I'm super excited to share with you this upcoming conversation. Now, let's sit back, relax, and enjoy the episode, y'all. I have to admit, this episode is quite near and dear to my heart, and the reason why is I've been single for quite a while, about 5 years, and the pandemic is still happening at the time I'm recording this, but has been letting up, and my best friend was encouraging me to get back out there in the dating world, and I happen to know the author of this book, Head Over Heels. It's about yoga and dating. And Rachel Scott, the author, was on a previous episode on the podcast. Check out episode 101, Yoga and Education, when you get a chance. But I read her book cover to cover. I took notes and then I went on the dating apps. And I like to say, originally, I went on Bumble, this dating app, to find a second mother for my cats. And I got so much more than that. Her book really helped me demystify dating in the digital world. Dating through apps can sometimes feel dehumanizing, you know, swiping left, swiping right, based on a picture. It feels kind of icky, but Rachel really helps navigate this, all of this, from a yogic perspective. And I am so grateful for this book. I'm grateful for Rachel for writing this book. It has rocked my world. I know it's gonna help a lot of people, like it has helped me, and I can't wait to dive deeper into this interview. Stay tuned. Joining us on today's episode, she is a yoga teacher trainer, author of the book, Head Over Heels, A Yogi's Guide to Dating, as well as other books. She is a coach who is committed to helping her students uncover and express their voice, passion, and potential. Please welcome back to the show, Rachel Scott. Rachel, how are you today?
Good, Ashley. It's nice to see you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, good. Good. Things are good. Things are busy, as they often are for many of us yogi entrepreneurs who are hustling, but it's great. The hustle's good.
I love that. Would you like to introduce yourself a bit more and share who you are in the world of yoga?
Sure. So I started practicing, it's 20, 5 years ago now. I've been practicing yoga. Wow. Isn't that crazy?
That is wild.
I got old, girl. But I've been practicing for 25 years and I just love learning and I love the world of education. So basically within about 4 years of earning my 500, whatever, back in becoming a teacher, I started wanting to be involved in teacher trainings. So that's kind of been my path with yoga is education. So I, you know, and writing, which we'll talk more about later, but so now I've helped build teacher training departments. I help people now build their own teacher training so that in addition to kind of supporting my own students, now I get to help support schools just really find their way and create really awesome education. Mm. So that, you know, it's super fun. I get to be in the nerd world a lot and talk to, you know, excited, committed people and help studios launch their own training. So mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of where, yeah, that's one of the pieces of my world that's pretty big.
Yeah. Well, let's get into your book, because I read this book. I was talking to you earlier before we hit record. This book changed my life on a personal level. And what inspired you to write the book Head Over Heels?
Yes. Okay. So I was just hit 40, I think, mm-hmm. when I wrote this. And what happened is I'd just broken up with my boyfriend who I'd been with we'd been together for like, you know, 7 years. And after my divorce, which was another story. So we'd been struggling because he really didn't want kids. I wanted kids. And we finally just kind of reached this impasse where it wasn't working. And so there I was going like, oh my gosh, I had the big dream of the partnership and the traditional mm-hmm. marriage, you know, like having kids with the person that you're with, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, I'm not really making many inroads sitting on my couch, drinking my wine and eating popcorn and watching Downton Abbey, although that is fun. And I thought, well, come on, I got to get, if I really want to make a run at this, I got to do it. So I basically, in 1 week, I signed up for, I think like 6 different dating services, right? All. And I was like, I'm getting out there. And so that led me on this journey towards going on a lot of first dates and to getting out there and meeting people and putting myself into that space. And I hadn't been there since, you know, the 90s, when it was like, just like when there were just like these little tendrils of online dating, it was really not cool yet. It was like, yeah, you're going to get killed. But so back in that world. And I started to realize as I went on all of these dates and met people that dating was the perfect opportunity to practice yoga. It's like dating. We all know relationships are really a path towards spiritual enlightenment and self-growth and personal development, because you have someone to mirror back things to you that we just can't see on our own, to bring up stuff that we can't just do when we don't usually elicit when we're solitary. Mm-hmm. But dating is this really amazing place to kind of to put our training wheels on and really practice what we preach. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it became this big journey.
I love your book because it talks about apps and navigating that. And there's something, it can feel very, or at least for me, and you've mentioned in your book, it can feel very dehumanizing, like swiping right or left, like based on someone's picture. And I love how you address it in the book. But and there's a lot of points to your book about why dating is so hard. But in a nutshell, do you care to share, like, why is dating so hard?
Dating is, God, there's so many elements of it, especially with the online stuff these days,
yeah,
because as you say, it's so dehumanizing and it's easy to become callous in that world, mm-hmm. where we become cavalier, and because it's like this self-protective measure, you're looking mm-hmm. at a bunch of people, you're trying to figure out what you want. And it's overwhelming to actually think about each of these people as an individual human. So, mm-hmm. you know, that's one of the things that makes it hard way before you meet people, like way before you even encountered somebody. But then the encountering of somebody is just like this crazy learning opportunity, because we show up with all of our hopes, dreams, and expectations. And one of the things that is amazing about dating, which we don't find in very many arenas, is that we usually walk in, you know, if you're keen and not just doing it to be entertained, which some people do, mm-hmm. but if you're actually really looking for somebody, you walk in and it's this mix of like, oh my gosh, this moment could change my life. Like, this could be it. And then the fear of putting ourselves out there for somebody. So there's this massive exposure, but at the same time, it's totally low risk. Like, you don't know this person, you never have to see them again. And yet our emotions get so high because honestly, you know, if we're out there, we're putting ourselves out there, we're usually looking for something. We're doing it sincerely. That is, you know.
Right. So what would be one thing specifically that we all might get wrong about dating?
I think having to be someone that we're not.
Oh, you know? Yeah. Our representative showing up to the first date. Yeah.
That's a great way to put it. Yeah, it's like, I will bring my shiniest, best self forward and I will not, and you will not see the real me. And then of course, eventually, even if you did manage to fool someone or yourself for a couple of dates, eventually our own wonderful quirkiness, which is what makes us so lovable, is going to come out. But we all tend to sometimes hide those things rather than bringing them to light. Or for me, it's honesty. Like, I would want to lie through my teeth to dates. Like, I, you know, because I have this kind of desire not to hurt anybody's feelings. I have this desire to like look good, to please people, to be who they want. So if they would be like, oh my gosh, yeah, I love this, I'd be like, oh yeah, that's really cool. And I'm like thinking, I really hate that. You know, like,
yeah.
So our lack of, it throws us off because we're in this situation. So finding our center is the practice to come back to that again and again. And we can get better at that through, but it is practice. We sometimes think it's just going to happen. Like, we're kind of told the story in life that relationships just happen or inspiration just happens. Or, you know, the magic just happens. But I think actually there's a little bit of work. That's true sometimes, but really it's us showing up as us, which can maybe expedite the magic a little bit or give it some, you know, extra fairy juice.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so what would be a simple way to incorporate yogic philosophy in dating?
Well, I think the heart of the book, I mean, spoiler alert, I'll hear the end. I mean, but really it's what happens is that we tend to look outside of ourselves. You know, it's human nature. It's very sweet and endearing that this is what we do. Mm-hmm. But we look out of ourselves a lot of time for the things that we actually want for ourselves. And so when we're dating, we want to approach it rather than from a place of lack. Mm-hmm. And I want to be clear, we're not going to eradicate that sense of lack. Like, you know, we look at it, we're like, someday I will be whole and perfect, and then I'll be ready to get out there. It's mm-hmm. like, no, we're going to have all of that stuff going on inside of us. We're going to have that feeling of longing and love and things, but we need to own that and know that we're going to caretake that part of ourselves, not to expect someone else to do it. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of times we'll get into dating to fill something in ourselves that we need, whether it's like, I need to feel loved, I need to be protected. You know, I want to be more like that person. And it's hard for me to find those resources in myself. So the more work we can do to show up perfectly imperfect and whole will, one, allow us to actually give something to the other person, show up with something, you know, more in our gas tank, if you will, or more to give. Mm-hmm. And it will also help us make better decisions. Because how many relationships, gosh, especially looking for a baby daddy, how many, you know, relationships did I consider like, I don't know, this could work, when you're like, this is not a good idea.
Yeah.
But in lessening our dependence on someone else to be a certain way, we can support them better to be the best person they can be. And we remove the responsibility of them to make everything okay for us. We're like, I'm going to take care of that piece. That way we can be more than, rather than in this kind of cycle of just filling each other's deficiencies.
Yeah.
Would be the thing. Yeah.
Yeah. So sense of self, which you can find through the pathway of yoga and meditation. I mean, you know, we're biased, of course, but
we are
pathways biased to get that sense of self. And then the dating or the person you're with is just the cherry on top of an already fulfilled life, right? That's like the goal.
That would be, yeah. I mean, and it depends what you want from a relationship. Obviously, the more clear we can be about our values and what we want, the more we can create an environment where that someone with those qualities has room to show up. Like, you know, for example, for me being in a relationship, one of the things that I really wanted in a relationship after I kind of moved through the baby daddy phase, which is very specific. And everybody out there, there's lots of ways to have a baby that don't involve finding a baby daddy or, you know, or baby mommy. So yeah, there's lots of options now. But once we get through that, I really wanted to find a partner who could help me, where my relationship, part of my relationship could also be a spirit, continue to be a spiritual work. And, you know, where they might lovingly point out the blind spots that I have, or where I could have an environment to communicate about the things that are scary to me. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we start to get a little bit more aware of what the things are that are really going to, you know, satisfy us and make us excited to be in relationship with someone else.
Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts? Because I always hear this saying all the time, and I kind of get it and I kind of don't. What are your thoughts about finding the one when you're not looking? But say you're on a dating app, you're kind of looking, right? So like, what are your thoughts?
You are kind of looking. I think that finding the one when you're not looking really happens because when people are not looking, they have that sense of they're doing their thing, right? They're invested in their life. They're not trying to look for someone to fill a gap or to fill a void. So I think that's why that happens, is because we're like, I'm in my joy. I'm in my world. Ooh. I'm doing my thing. And I'm not trying to fix it. But I think we can show up with that same not looking quality and be looking at the same time. You know?
Yeah. Both can exist simultaneously.
Absolutely.
Can I ask you about your story and meeting Gil and all that? I just think that's so cool that y'all are together.
Oh, I know. He's the bomb. Well, he came later. So I went through the fire of the baby daddy experience. And what was interesting is that I came to this point, again, spoiler alert for everyone out there, but eventually I was involved in these relationships. It was also torturous. Like, this was such a crazy time in my life. And I think people will understand where the expectations of where you think you're supposed to be and your life are not the same.
Yes.
And it's so painful. Mm-hmm. And eventually you go, wow, okay, I either am going to live in this sort of pit of unmet expectations, or I'm going to adapt, expand, and like try to and thrive in the life that I have. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, after trying to kind of fit a relationship into, you know, my scenario, I kind of realized, you know what? And this is when, at the end of the book, you'll see I'm kind of like, all right, where am I at? Right. I've done this thing. Mm-hmm. I had a relationship for like a year, mm-hmm. Which was incredibly illuminating, but also it didn't work. I couldn't shoehorn it into the thing that I wanted, even though he's a great guy. And so and that started to reveal something about me. I'm like, wow, having the right relationship is more important to me than having the kid. And that was, you know, cause some folks out there and that's totally great. Will have a relationship where they're kind of like, you know what, I'm making some compromises here, but that's okay, because this family vision is what I want, or, you know, or we fall into things sometimes that way. But for me, it was kind of like, actually, I can't do that. Like, so I decided to try to have a child on my own, which was, yeah, I know, this is like postscript. So I went, I did the sperm clinic thing. I did the shoot sperm up your vagina, you know, in a medical setting. I did that a few times. I did that four times. And at the end of that, I kind of was like, okay, like I've given it a good heave ho. Like, I gave it a good try. I kind of said to the universe, I'm putting myself out here. It was terrifying. Here I am, I'm a yogi. And like, you know, a single woman, and that's what I'm going to do. And anyway, but I kind of reached this contentment with that particular piece. I was like, you know, when you give something a good try and you're like, okay, like the Bhagavad Gita, do your best and let go of the results. I was like, okay, my best, let go of the results. And then after that, after I kind of reached this point of going like, okay, I'm stepping beyond that piece. I'm going to go see how I can be, you know, because what I really wanted from motherhood, I think, was connection and love. And I'm going to go create those things in a different way. Like, okay, like, how can I create that for myself? And so Gil and I met, and he's, of course, he has three kids already, fully grown, no interest in having more children. Like, that's not on the table. Uh-huh. But we met at this point where he'd had his kids and I'd kind of gone through this whole journey. Mm-hmm. And so now we're together. And what's really fun is that I have access to his children, you know, they're three humans, and, you know, I get to be connected to them. And it's, you know, I wouldn't go so far. They're older, so I wouldn't say that I'm a stepmom, but I get to be kind of like an adult friend figure to them, which is so rewarding. And they're just awesome. So, you know, community and family and love takes lots of different forms. And we really just want to relish and, you know, love on and invest in the ones that we've got and who's around.
I love that. And I love that you still get that family. It just looks different than what you might have originally thought. That's so, thank you for sharing that. I love hearing that. So let's go back to dating. And in your book, you talk about boundaries while dating, or dating is an opportunity to uphold boundaries. So do you care to give an example about that?
There's this one. Well, you know, immediately when I think of boundaries, I mean, there's so many ways in which this comes about. Let me just flash back. One of the challenges of one of my previous relationships was my difficulty in upholding boundaries to do the things that I needed to do to make me happy in the relationship. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like something as simple as, you know, I want to go to the yoga class, but my partner is really wants me to be around. And so I don't do that for myself. And so then I'm with them, but then I'm kind of angry and sad. Mm-hmm. So figuring out how boundaries are really about, I used to think they were really mean. I used to think like that boundaries meant that I wasn't giving or nice. Cause it's like, if you're a people pleaser out there, sometimes we feel like having a boundary or speaking our truth is not loving. Mm-hmm. And it's something I still work on. Mm-hmm. I'm with a partner, fortunately, who is so generous and lets me have so much freedom without any sort of guilt trip or anything like that. Mm-hmm. That is, you know, I don't have to run up against that so much. But creating a boundary is a way of actually supporting yourself to be the best person in the relationship so that you can show up in a more full way. Mm-hmm. And partners don't always, you know, have the same needs or have the same, you know, they might fill their well in a different way. And so they don't always understand. So that's just part of the dance. Mm. Yeah. And I think about whenever I hear boundaries, I think about sex. Cause it's really, you know, and finding our way through that, which is a whole thorny wicket. But I would just say the thing that I've learned is that if it doesn't feel good, mm-hmm. then it's time to step back and figure out what you need to do for yourself to be in a feel good state, because a relationship that's moving forward where somebody is not in that feeling of freedom and generosity and love means that we have to adjust the relationship. Otherwise it's not sustainable. So sustainability, boundaries create sustainability.
That's a beautiful concept. Boundaries create sustainability. Yes. And your answer touches on my next question about basically yoga and sex, or dating and sex and celibacy. And you talk about it a little bit in your book. And care to share with us your thoughts on that?
Well, in the yoga tradition, we have, you know, brahmacharya, which, you know, everyone wants to say is like moderation of your sensual energy. No, it means no sex. So yogis were just took it off the table, at least the, you know, Hatha yogis of old, back in Patanjali yogis, and they would just take sex off the table because sex is so, it is there's so much energy in much energy in sexual, in sexuality. And so some yogis just kind of took it off the table and were like, we're just going to take that away. We're just going to take all that energy and put it in ourselves. And we're not going to worry about it because boy, that's messy. And then later in Tantra, it became more about how do we use that energy for the purpose of, you know, spiritual growth or spiritual connection. Mm. And I think that that's like a perhaps for us like out in the world, little sexual creatures that we are and householders that we are, that's a positive way to think about it. Mm-hmm. So treating our own sexual energy with respect, and also, you know, I say, like, for me, I'm not someone who has sex casually. Like, that's just not my style. And some people are more free with that. So mm-hmm. whether it's the way I was raised or just some sort of innate kind of thing, I tend to be like somebody who waits. And what I learned from my experience dating is because I didn't really have a really clear relationship with my own sexuality and when I say yes and when I'd say no. When I was younger, I said yes a lot of times, again, to not disappoint people.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was something that I really wanted or would feel good mm-hmm. Or really felt good in that moment. So what I learned through dating was you can't say yes really until you can say no.
Oh. So,
like, you can't, like, until you have the choice, the option mm-hmm. to say, and so I kind of say, you know, for me, it was very useful and I would say therapeutic, or it was such a good antidote to be able to really call the shots with how I did that and to wait until it felt really right. And that wound up being such a gift, because unless we have the option to not, like, really fully, unless it can be a real yet, like, unless we really can say no with no problem, we really can't say yes with a full heart and let our whole selves be there sometimes. So I'd say for, you know, for anyone out there, it's really useful for us, especially in dating. It's a little different when you're in a relationship and you've been in there for a while. But with dating, it's to really let ourselves listen to our whole self, like our body. Mm-hmm. is going to tell us something, our mind is going to tell us something, and we can, like, attune to that and have discrimination about what it's telling us and listen mm-hmm. to its stories and kind of go, like, those real stories or those crazy stories, and listen to our heart and our feelings. And then when all of that kind of makes sense and we feel kind of, like, full-hearted about it, mm-hmm. then to say, you know, yes.
Well, I'm feeling like there's trust. The undercurrent is, like, trust with the person that you might be having sex with, and trust within yourself, and trusting that you can say no to them and they're not going to flip out, and, you know, like, it's not going to be a problem. So, yeah.
One time I was with this guy, one of the guys that I dated, and, you know, it was kind of moving on. We were, like, had a slumber party at his house. Like, I came over. Gonna spend the night, and then I was like, I don't want to have sex with this guy. And I mean, it wasn't like, it was kind of like, yet I don't feel, it doesn't feel right yet. Anyways, fast forward, I found out later that he had kind of, like, this other girl he was dating on the side, or had unresolved issues with. And I was like,
oh no.
I'm like, yeah, just so listen to yourselves. And this isn't to dissuade. Some folks out there are, like, super free in their sexuality, and it feels like an easier part of themselves to share with someone else. I'm just a little bit more, you know, I'm a little bit more tied up that way. Mm-hmm. So, but listening to yourself will never be wrong, or doing it with, and being clear, and, you know, yeah, all of you on board, basically.
Yes. Yeah. Great advice. You talk about, I've never heard this before, but you talk about the difference between love and romance, and how they can be the same, but they can also be different. And I just love what you have to say about it.
Well, romance is kind of like the opposite of intimacy. So like romance is, I love romance. Don't we all? Like, we all watch the Ryan Gosling movies, or whoever, Scarlett Johansson, whoever is, like, you know, the Hollywood romance, which, as we all know, ends as soon as they, you know, get together, or the mm-hmm. Disney, which, you know, I was raised on and loved, which is, and all of that is based on kind of this idealized partner who is going to, again, fix that missing piece, which we talked about earlier. They're going to fix something. They're going to fix a problem. And also, it relies a lot on filling in the unknowns with your own head, at least in Disney. Maybe it's, you know, different because it's fiction, but in real life, what we do is we meet somebody, and falling in love, I don't think is quite the same thing as love. We need more words for love, because falling in love is oftentimes based on something. Yes, there's something there for sure, but it's also a massive projection.
Mm.
We're kind of like, we have all of these ideas about this person and they kind of get this glow. And this is super fun, guys. Go for the ride. Like, go for the ride. Go for the love ride. But the truth is that over time, that romance, which is based a lot on not having information, you know, changed into intimacy, which is about having information. And that's right, because that's when we go, oh my gosh, you have an anger issue, or oh my gosh, you can be withholding and petulant, or oh wow, you just gaslight me, or like, what's this weird thing, you know? So we have all, like, people show up and become more and more human and more complex, and that's that's really fun. So enjoy all parts of the journey. Enjoy the great falling in love, and also enjoy pulling the mask away from that as all those things you projected start to get filled in with more understanding and experience of this human. And that's where, you know, that's kind of where the love work begins.
I love the way you explain that. Less information versus more information about a person. That is a great way to put it. Rachel, thank you so much for being on the show today. I'm just delighted to talk with you about yoga and dating. Where can we find you in the world and online?
Yeah, so you can find me at racheloyoga.com. That's so R-A-C-H-E-L. Find me on social media. Like, I'm on Instagram as Rachel Scott Yoga. Mm-hmm. And I still, like, to me, yoga is, I love yoga. I love the practice. Sure, I love mentoring teachers in asana and alignment and anatomy. But really, the thing that keeps me coming back to teaching yoga is because it provides a pathway and a space to ask these questions about ourselves, mm-hmm. and to ask these questions about the world and how we can live. And so you'll find sometimes I do lots of musings called yoga and relationships and yoga. To this day, I just did one yesterday. So if you kind of are interested in this kind of exploration and how the yoga practice can support it, come and find me. And, you know, we have a little community going on this kind of stuff. So.
That's awesome. What a great resource. Well, and all of the stuff Rachel mentioned to connect with her will be linked in the show notes. So you're just one click away from connecting with Rachel. Thank you so much.
Ashley, great to see you. Thanks for having me.
All right. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. And if you receive value from the show, please write us a 5-star review, and or you can text this episode to just one friend who you know will love yoga and podcasts. We thank you so much in advance for the huge favor. Word of mouth helps support the show in reaching a greater audience, and we could not grow without you. If you want to connect with us, our email is yogaandpodcast@gmail.com. The and is spelled out, yogaandpodcast@gmail.com. Please follow us on Instagram at Yoga and Podcast. We are now on TikTok. The handle is also Yoga and Podcast. When you follow us, we will follow you right back on both platforms. Music is by Mama Duke. Graphics, guest booking, and media by me, your host, Ashley Weber. I am so grateful for you. Thank you for listening.